Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapelake Grayley, along with Tom Luongo. This week, we're inviting Eric McElhane along to talk with us about the playoff matchups. Plus, we have a lot more to go. This is a two-parter this week. Welcome to episode 29A of The Rink. The playoffs are set. They start in just a couple of days from the time that we're recording this. And it's an interesting... there are some interesting matchups that we're looking at right now. I've got Eric McElhane, of course, with us, and Tom Luongo, my regular man across the country. I can't think of a better place to start, really, myself than the Boston Bruins taking on the Montreal Canadiens. This is a matchup that has happened over and over and over. The Bruins, traditionally, to me, have always been playing the Montreal Canadiens sweaters more than the actual team themselves. Seen it several times where a really good Bruins team comes up against the Canadiens, and the Canadiens squash them like a bug. I don't see that happening this time, though.
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. If there'll be one thing that I'll really enjoy about this playoff season, it will be watching Montreal epic fail their way out of the first round. Multiple injuries, no balanced scoring. I think I was looking at Pierre LeBrun's Brownie Awards today, and the Brownie Awards, and he said, with the Where Have We Gone file, I think he put Thomas Plekanec in the Where Have We Gone file, and he made a really good point about how the Canadiens have been lacking in balanced scoring because Plekanec has scored, I think, less than 45% of the points that he scored a year ago. So there's that, and then, of course, is the complete lack of transition game. So, aside from the fact that to me this is going to be a bloodbath because they hate each other, but I think the Bruins are up for it.
Yeah, same here. I mean, Bruins in five. The Canadiens will win one at home, and all of a sudden, Bob Gainey will be his efficacy in Montreal will be questioned all during the series, and right. he will be on a short hook once it's over. I'll be surprised if he makes it to the draft.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that was kind of what I was thinking was, did the coaching change help the Bruins or help the Canadiens keep this, stay at this eighth slot? If they had stayed the course with Guy Carboneau, do you think they would have made the playoffs regardless? I'll throw that one first to Eric.
Well, I really don't think that the problems with the Canadiens could have been really fixed terribly well with without doing some real restructuring at the deadline. I mean, it was kind of like it was the last thing left to do. I mean, they couldn't make any deals at the deadline. They couldn't bring in the players that they needed to bring in, and all of a sudden, oops, might as well flip out the coach. It was the last option. It was the only option for Gainey, to try. And even though they did make the playoffs, I mean, they dropped a couple of places. I mean, all the way to eighth. So, I can't really see this season being considered any kind of triumph unless Gainey figures out a way to, win a round or two, and he just doesn't have the firepower to do it.
No, not without Robert Lang, and not with apparently the pretty serious injuries to both Andre Markov and Matthew Schneider. They don't have a good transition game. They don't have that second line center that they really need to go up against the Bruins. They're three centers deep. I mean, I watched a little bit of Patrice Bergeron over the weekend, and he just looks like he's just far and away better than anybody in a Habs sweater that's not named Saku Koivu, and he's the third line. And he's the third line center.
Yeah,
in Boston. So I just don't see it happening. And yeah, Eric, you're right. I mean, they had personnel issues. They had obviously then they had cap issues. So they couldn't make any moves. You had a whole bunch of underachieving players, and you fire the coach and hope to shake up the locker room, and it didn't work. I don't know. Well, makes me happy, actually. And if and honestly, if either Florida or Buffalo had grown a pair and frankly, let's just call a spade. Neither the Panthers nor the Sabres grew a pair and said, yeah, we want that eighth spot. And had they done so, they'd have taken it from the Canadiens. And then we'd be talking about how Bob Gainey is the ex-GM slash coach in Montreal.
Right. Yeah, no, it's, hey, I have a good point. Taking a look at the goaltending matchup, Tim Thomas versus Carey Price. Tim Thomas.
What matchup?
Tim Thomas is a monster right now. You just can't stop this guy. And knowing that he's going to be with the Bruins for several years to come with his new contract extension, I'm sure he's going to have quite a bit of confidence that, you know, on top of what he's already had, which has been an incredible season.
Yeah, I mean, he's the presumptive Vezina Trophy winner. He's got probably the best defensive defenseman in hockey in front of him in Zdeno Chara. A guy who is going to, you know, probably give you close to 30 minutes a night in the playoffs and just be the guy who's going to erase the top offensive player on the other team, no matter who it is they're facing. I mean, it's – and like Tom said, they're three centers deep. They're so deep at forward, it's terrifying how right. good they are. And in a lot of ways, I mean, after seeing the Caps take, you know, three or four from them in the regular season, I kind of wonder how it happened, knowing how deep they are everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the Caps are just, you know, the Caps are that good as well, but, you know, they're not nearly as deep as Boston in terms of forwards or on the blue line. And well, it's just a case of the best players came to play when the Caps played the Bruins those four times.
Yeah, don't sell the your boy short or anything, because they are as well. I mean, something that's a point of making all season long, which is the Caps as well are three centers deep, and that's where the matchup really it gets interesting. And looking forward down the line into the second and third round, or it'd probably be the third round, the Eastern Conference Finals. When you look at those are the teams that, you know, when I was handicapping the year, those are the teams I'm saying, well, these are the teams, you know, my guys have got to stack up against. Is which teams in the East are three centers deep and get into a shooting match, because, you know, I don't think any of the teams in the East are really what you would call defensive stalwarts or anything. I think every defensive core has a serious flaw or two, and it really may come down to the difference between, you know, best shooters versus the best goaltender, and whoever wins that final battle is the one who's going to win the conference. If you take my meaning, and yeah, I would take Chara as the guy to anchor a defense over anybody in Washington at this point, at least.
Yeah, I mean, but I guess we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Well, kind of. Yeah. I mean, we can is the next matchup on the list is Capitals versus Rangers. And, you know, Eric, sitting where you get to sit and watch the Capitals all the time, if I were a betting man, I would bet that there isn't too much that you're concerned with right now.
Well, I mean, just being the nervous Nelly that I am, you look at things in terms of potential threats. And, you know, when you look at the New York Rangers, you build out from goal, and you look at Henrik Lundqvist, who is a goaltender who is quite capable of stealing series, number one.
Right.
Number two, and I talked about this with Greg Wyshynski the other night. We were at the national final at the Frozen Four at Verizon Center, and he was talking about, you know, Ryan Callahan and Sean Avery and how they may just drive the Washington Capitals defense nuts. Mm. I think he's got a point True. There in that those two guys – are going to be, you know, camping out in front of the net, and Cho and Jose Theodore are nothing but their backsides and causing all sorts of havoc for a defense that's not known for being particularly physical. Mm-hmm. And right. I wonder, you know, about that matchup with Avery against Theodore. I mean, a lot of times we think about teams attacking other teams. We always only think about it in terms of who's moving the puck and who's shooting the puck, and we forget about the guys who are tangling in front of the net and in the corners. And Callahan and Avery, right. you know, are real important guys in terms of the Rangers getting things right. And I also look at the Rangers having the best penalty kill in the NHL against the Capitals have virtually the best power play in the NHL.
Right.
And how is that going to play out? Of course, I look back to the regular season and I see, you know, the Caps won 3 of 4 again against the Rangers and played very well in New York. It wasn't like they were overmatched or anything. I still think this is a series the Capitals can win. But I by no means think it's going to be a loss. I think it'll be a six game series.
Hmm. Yeah, it's the interesting part I think about that series is that the Capitals haven't actually seen the quote unquote new look Rangers. They actually haven't played each other since Tortorella took over. Since the trade deadline, since Avery came back in, any of it. So it's a little bit of a question mark there as to the matchup.
Yeah, I mean, there's some mystery there. I mean, like I said, overall, I think the Caps are going to win this series. I just don't think it's going to – it's just not going to be easy. Hmm. It's going to be – it'll be hard fought. And, fact of the matter is that all you need is for your goaltender to steal one game on the road. Mm-hmm. And when you're the low seed, and the complexion of the entire series can change.
Yep.
And Henrik Lundqvist is the kind of guy who can do that. I mean, he's won playoff series before in his career. Granted, he hasn't gotten them to the promised land yet, but he's just the kind of elite goaltender that can send a shiver down your spine. And there are still going to be questions as to which Jose Theodore is going to show up for mm-hmm. this round. I mean, we've all seen, Jose Theodore at his best when he was with Montreal. Mm-hmm. And we've all seen Jose Theodore at his worst, where he's, just completely out of rhythm and not effective. And, those things are questions going into this playoff series. I mean, I will say this, that, Jose Theodore, after a shaky start, played better the last two-thirds of the season. Although, lately he's had some troubles, and part of those troubles have been because the blue line has kind of fallen apart in front of him, and the Caps have, failed to pay attention to some of the basics that they need to be able to compete defensively. Mm-hmm. But, for all those worries, I still think they'll win this series.
Who's backing up Theodore right now? Is it Johnson's not back, is he?
No, we still don't have a word officially on who is going to be the number two goaltender, if it's going to be Simon Varlamov or Brent Johnson.
Mm. Right. Well, the one thing I will say is that when watching the Caps play, it's obvious that they play defense as a five-man unit when they're on their game, and that's what really makes that defense core of theirs, which is the first place you look at and say, well, if this is the team's weakness, it would be that. But they seem to play the forwards seem to play too well in their own zone to let this go. And I don't think Boudreaux is going to have them come out flat and allow the Rangers, who don't really have much of a transition game in the first place. So they're going to have to play chip and chase and get in and muck the corners and try and manufacture something out of nothing. And if the Caps just play good, solid, good solid five-man defense in their own zone, they really shouldn't give the Rangers too many good looks and at Theodore, and it shouldn't be. To me, it just doesn't seem like that. It doesn't seem like that big a deal. The Caps are too strong in the neutral zone. The Rangers' transition game is average at best, and I think that a lot of their potential offense is going to get bottled up before they even get out of their own zone. That's the way I see it.
And the other thing I keep thinking of that's bound to happen at one point or another is that the Capitals really have four skaters who can take over a game at any time. And
right.
Of course, I'm talking about Alex Ovechkin, Alex Semin, Nicklas Backstrom, and Mike Green, all of mm-hmm. whom can just dominate play on the ice for long stretches of time. And the Rangers simply do not have anybody who can match up well with really any of them for any kind of period of time. The problem the Caps had last year for a little bit was when the Flyers were able to sort of detail Mike Richards and Kimmo Timonen to sort of shadow Alex Ovechkin, give him a hard time. That worked to a certain extent. I mean, it's a case of the old Dan Patrick line: you can't stop him; you can only hope to contain him. But
right.
for stretches at times, that's worked. But again, the Rangers, they just can't match up with those four guys with the people they got up front. So, I mean, I imagine a six-game series here, but one that's not going to be a cakewalk.
No, I could imagine not. Moving on to the next series, the hottest team in hockey to finish up, Carolina Hurricanes versus the three-seed New Jersey Devils. Carolina Hurricanes, they're riding quite a tide. I'd almost, if I were them, I'd have almost wanted not to stop playing games.
Yeah, I mean, Cam Ward, they really just climbed like Cam Ward's back down the stretch there. What was it, 28 or 29 straight starts to finish up the season?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we all know what it's like when Cam Ward gets hot. I mean, we remember what happened 3 years ago. And, of course, you know, there's the other thing to remember is whenever Carolina gets into the playoffs, they seem to make make it count. The last two times they've been in the playoffs, they've gotten to the finals and won one. So
exactly. Yeah, and this team's got, you know,
been there before too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has. And and most of the team has been there before. And it's going to be a very interesting series. The question is, you know, which Cam Ward, which Marty Brodeur. You make the point that Ward has started, what, 28 or 29 games the last third of the season, effectively. Is that going to be a case of him finally getting to the playoffs and being tired? And then Brodeur, you know, doing some little bit of technical work and getting himself together and having not played for most of the season, be nice and fresh, and just be Marty, the Marty Brodeur that we've seen win three Stanley Cups. I think it's going to be that as much as anything else, because these are two really well-balanced teams at both ends of the ice. They're both deep offensively. And, you know, and Maurice has been there and Brent Sutter hasn't, at least in the coaching capacity. So I'm not calling the series. I'm really not.
I wouldn't be surprised if Carolina wins this one.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either.
Well, Tom and I have also talked about the return of Eric Cole and how much of a difference that's making for this team. That's for not working out in Edmonton at all, and then coming back to Carolina and having such a resurgence at that right time, it's pretty hard to discount his influence on the team.
Yeah, I saw the Hurricanes play the Capitals in Washington after the Cole trade. And it was amazing the havoc that he was able to wreck in front of the net. I mean, he really is, you know, the missing ingredient for them at the deadline. You know, they really missed him in a big, bad way once they moved him for Pitkin. And they were certainly, you know, overjoyed to have him back. And I'll say this, if you get into a fire wagon hockey situation with the Carolina Hurricanes, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. Yep. I mean, you know, you do not want to let them get into that run and gun game that worked so well in 2006 when they won that cup. You will not win. I mean, you're going to have a very, very tough time.
They will skate you into the ground.
Exactly.
They will skate you into the ground, and they will continue to skate you into the ground because it's their third and fourth lines that'll do it. And I mean, they've got you know, a great set of forwards in the top six, but it's the unsung guys. It's Chandler Rose and those guys, that's what makes this team annoying. Because once they get into that and they can roll four lines, they'll just keep coming at you. And they get that and they get their swerve on, and you just don't want to be there. But same thing can be said for this Devils team, too, because this Devils team is extremely deep, and you don't want to let them get on a roll either. So I would not be shocked to see this be the seven games series in this round.
Yeah,
I really wouldn't.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page on this one, Tom.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's I was reading something interesting on NHL.com when looking at the matchups, saying that in the matchups between the Devils and the Canes, Toivo Ruutu and Sergei Samsonov each had three goals in their series. You didn't hear a lot from Sergei Samsonov for a very long time. I mean, he's a lot of potential that never seemed to pan out, but things seem to have worked out pretty well for him against the Devils and lately with the Hurricanes.
Well, I really like what I've seen out of Tuomo Ruutu this year. I thought he's finally found a home in Carolina, and he's an integral part of that team. So you've got sandpaper and annoyance on every line up and down that team, and that's what's and it's effective sandpaper. It's not, you know. Carolina's not to be trifled with, and neither is New Jersey.
Well, the final matchup in the East is the one that's, I think, is going to be shoved down our throats the most. That's going to be the Flyers versus the Penguins. You couldn't write a better first round matchup, really, as far as the storyline. Cross state rivals, of course, Sidney Crosby. the Flyers, who were so hot for so long and are still extremely dangerous, nothing to sneeze at. Even beyond the Sidney Crosby story angle, and it's going to be a great series. It's going to have some interest to it.
Yeah, I mean, and the key thing I keep thinking of, the difference being this year to last, is that Pittsburgh, as good as they looked, don't have Marian Hossa on the ice for this series the way they had last year against the Flyers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that helps. It makes a world of difference this year. I really like the Flyers in this series.
And the Flyers are deeper than they were last year.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's a big one. Mike Richards is saying that, I mean, you've got everybody is healthy for the most part up front. Finally, you've got Briere is healthy. Gagne is healthy. Knubel is healthy. Richards, Carter, the whole list. And then the defense is better than it was last year. And this is Marty Biron's time of the year.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby bear up under the physical punishment, because they're going to get like a lot of it.
Yes,
it's
they
gonna
are.
Be Mike Richards, my friends, is a bona fide NHL superstar, and
oh yeah,
he's got all facets of the game. And let me tell you, he's going to have a bullseye painted on Sidney Crosby's back. And he is not going to give him an inch to skate, whether it's nope. Crosby or if it's Malkin. He's going to be in the face of either of them this entire series. I really think it's going to go the distance, but I like the Flyers here. I really do.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a toss up. I think he could go the distance. I think you could see seven games out of this series. It's. I think it really is going to depend on the goaltending. As good as everybody is up front, I think it's kind of which Biron shows up and which Marc-Andre Fleury shows up is going to have the most influence on this series than anything. That's just my feeling about it, though.
Marc-Andre Fleury played the entire season. I do not expect him to be as fresh and as sharp as he was last year. Ryan Miller made a very good point sometime during the season, where he said that if you look back over the last few seasons, the goaltenders who got hot in the playoffs in the East and carried their teams were ones that had significant injuries during the season that allowed them to get a significant break in the middle of the season. Himself, Fleury, and I expect Brodeur to be that guy this year. Biron always starts slow. And effectively was shuttled back and forth between him and Nidamaki until the last 20 games of the season or 25 games of the season, and now it's Biron's time. I'm giving it to Biron. I'm giving the edge to Biron in the series. I really am. He's got the year's worth of experience under his belt, and he just seems to play the best when the games mean the most. Hmm. He really does.
All right. Well, I think that about covers the East. Let's move on to the West, gentlemen. Starting at the top of the list, number 8 Ducks versus number 1 Sharks.
Oh, my.
I don't think the Ducks have a chance in hell.
Oh, my. Is this thing going to be a bloodbath, though? This is the same. This is a kind of like the bloodbath that Boston Montreal is. I think these two teams, one, I don't think they like each other. Two, I think this is the perfect matchup for the Sharks to see if they're for real this year or not, honestly, because the Ducks are not going to go away. They're no shrinking violets.
You know, let me tell you, the thing about the Ducks that I really like is right at the deadline or before the deadline, the GM there pulled off deals where he imported Ryan Whitney and James Wisniewski.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And now he's getting Francois Beauchemin back. So you've got the three guys that played anywhere between 27 and 30-plus minutes a night on the blue line, plus Wisniewski and Whitney.
Yep.
Gentlemen, that's the toughest blue line in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That is the toughest blue line in the playoffs. And when you've got Pronger and Niedermayer playing 30-plus minutes a night, it makes everybody else who's playing behind them that much better.
Yep.
And you can – I mean, I don't know how much a beating Beauchemin is going to be able to put up with just coming back from injury. I mean, asking him to play as much as he did 2 years ago in the run of the Cup is – probably going to be a little much, but I can tell you that I'm sure that they're lucky to, and they're happy to have him back. This is not going to be easy. I mean, the Sharks are the biggest team in the league, and it's, you're right, Tom. It's going to be an absolute bloodbath. I mean, it's going to be just the most brutal first round series out there.
I'm not missing a game of it. I haven't watched a whole lot of hockey in the last month or so. You know, I haven't even watched the Sabres. I haven't had this heart to find out whether they were going to, you know, show up or not. I'm watching every game of this series. This is the marquee matchup of the first round. The Ducks are everything that the Sharks have never been in the past. And if we're going to find out, again, it's like I said, we're going to find out whether or not the San Jose team is for real or not. Because is Joe Thornton going to stand up to this, to the pounding that he's going to get from Pronger or Niedermeyer? And. I mean, yeah, Sammy Paulson's not there. Yeah, but still.
Travis Moan is on the Sharks.
Travis Moan's on the Sharks, and Mike Greer is now. Now, the Sharks are, they are a nasty bunch of guys. You know, I mean, I love all their character guys. Mike Greer, Travis Moan, Ryan Clough. I like Joe Pavelski a lot. This is a very deep team. They're well coached.
Jonathan Chichu too. Don't forget him. Yeah, he's still there.
I'm not forgetting anybody. I'm just going through the list. I mean, Mahan, Mahalik. Yeah, you can just go down the list. It's an extremely deep team. And again, sandpaper on every line and all of that. But, you know, I'm not calling this one. I would not be surprised if the Ducks upset the Sharks. But, you know.
I would be very surprised if the Ducks upset the Sharks at this point. You know, I think there's a lot that people forget about the Sharks when they start looking back more at the playoffs of previous years. This Sharks team right now is amazingly on fire, and these against the Ducks, they didn't score that many goals to still take the season series. They know the Ducks pretty well. I mean, they're just right down the road. And the question for the Ducks for me is goaltending. Is it going to be Hiller? Is it going to be Giguere? Is Giguere going to turn his game back on when he needs to? And poor Jean, you know, poor Giguere. I mean, I can't discount at all, you know, his state of mind, his emotions right now. He's had a very rough year. But come the playoffs, come various times throughout various seasons, we've seen him fall apart before and not pick himself back up in time.
Yeah, but not during the playoffs.
No, not during the playoffs, but he's lost this. He lost the starting seat to Rizgalov for a time. I have a lot of questions about the Ducks right now.
No, I sort of why, but yeah, I still think that there comes a point where the guys that have been in San Jose have been here before and they failed, and until they don't fail, there's still going to be a question mark. I don't think this is the same team that was there under Ron Wilson. I don't think that at all. But until they prove it, hey, you know, this is the team I'm rooting for to win the win the whole thing. So, I mean, if I'm going to show my homer clothes here, you know, my team's out now. I root for San Jose. I've been doing this for years, but you know, I'd like to see this team survive. But I just think that this is the right matchup because you can turn the argument around that the San Jose knows Anaheim well by the same token, familiarity breeds contempt, and division rivals always seem to know each other better. I said the same thing about Buffalo and Boston all year long. If Buffalo made it into the ACs, I would not be surprised for them to give the Bruins all holy hell simply because they know each other so well and they know how to beat Boston. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of thing.
Yeah. It'll certainly be an interesting matchup. Next up on the list is the Detroit Red Wings versus the Columbus Blue Jackets. You had to think that the Blue Jackets were praying for the Blues to lose their game, the final game of the year, so that they wouldn't wind up playing the Red Wings first round in their very first playoffs ever. But this is a different Columbus Blue Jackets than we've ever seen before. You can see it in their training camp. You can see it now. I'm not saying that they're the Detroit Red Wings, but it's a different look. It's a different Blue Jackets than before.
Well, I mean, they've got the presumptive Calder Trophy winner in net. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having a rookie goaltender go into his first playoffs is always going to be problematic, as well as he might have played during the regular season. But, again, Mr. Mason has the ability to steal a game. What's good about the Jackets and what I like is they, you know, they've got the youth that they've been building since they came into the league. Plus, they've leavened that with some very, very interesting veteran presences, like Antoine Vermette and Michael Pekka. And Christian Salius. I mean, you know, there are all sorts of players there that, you know, have been there before.
Right.
And
right.
aren't going to be intimidated by playing in the Joe Louis Arena in games one and two.
And don't forget how Umberger turned on his game so well last season in the playoffs.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's really not the same old Blue Jackets team, and it's still Ken Hitchcock. And if there's a coach that's you know, well enough ready for the playoffs, it would be Mr. Hitchcock. I mean, his style of game fits it like a glove. So,
right.
I think this could be at least a 6-game series. Yeah.
The don't forget, I think I read today that Freddie Modine might be back for game one as well. And that makes the Jackets a little bit more dangerous up front. Another guy who's been there before, won a cup in Tampa. Right? Did he get traded that year?
Correct my memory. I don't remember.
I think he was there. Well, regardless, yeah, I think Eric's point, again, is valid in that, again, the interdivision rivalry or interdivision series are always interesting because they know how to play the other team. And we'll see. I don't think anybody's really intimidated by Detroit's defense beyond Lidstrom. You should be intimidated by their forwards and their ability to hold on to the puck and play whatever game you want to play. But, you know, Osgood's not setting the world on fire right now. We don't know. There are always questions. I'm not convinced that these Red Wings are that good. Maybe they are, but I'm not convinced of it at this point.
It's funny how we keep, you know, asking questions about Osgood. We've been asking questions about Osgood since what, like 1997?
Well, yeah, no, that's true, and I only say that because he has played so. He's not been even remotely consistent this year. In years
that's
past,
for sure.
he's been at least passable, at least capable of you go out in a regular season game and steal a game here or there that the Red Wings shouldn't have won or whatever. But you know, don't get me wrong, I have nothing but respect for Chris Osgood, but the way he's been playing this season has been different than the way he's played in years past.
And the other thing with Chris Osgood is that the only team that he's really played really well for has been the Red Wings. And when he was with the St. Louis Blues, that was not a good time for Chris Osgood, that's for sure.
No.
He's had his injury problems, of course. But no, when I like what Eric's point about Mason being able to steal a game. And when you look at the Red Wings goaltending right now, I don't see two guys that are going to be able to steal games when they really need to. I think Conklin's the bigger question mark, only because he is a little less proven than Osgood has been in the past. Osgood is not doing well now, but he has shown in the past where how good he's been able to be. Conklin had his time with the Penguins, and yet still he wasn't the go-to guy, and perhaps there's a good reason for that.
Go ahead, Eric.
You know, well, I mean, it's kind of funny. Back in January at the Winter Classic, I asked Conklin about sort of his career trajectory over the past few years, and I asked him about, you know, his from the time he had that epic meltdown with the Oilers. Mm-hmm. When they faced the Hurricanes in 06, to, you know, basically almost being out of the game, then coming back with the Penguins. And a lot of folks last season believed that Mr. Conklin was the real MVP of the Pittsburgh Penguins because he had that unbeaten streak when he came in and spelled Fleury for a while.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That really, you know, bridged the gap for that team. And then he came in and played, you know, I don't want to say he played lights out, but he played very well for the Red Wings this year. Certainly outplayed Chris Osgood, even though there are certain doubts about the man. And I asked him. I said, think back to 06 when you had that horrible experience with the Oilers, and now here you are with, you know, arguably one of the best teams in hockey, and you're playing in your third outdoor game in so many tries, and You know, you've been the goalie of record, and you won today. Can you talk something about, you know, what that ride's been like? And he really deflected the question. He didn't want to talk about it. And I wonder if that meltdown against the Hurricanes in the finals is still on his mind after all these years. And maybe that's going to make Mike Babcock a little hesitant to put him in there in the postseason after what happened. I mean, maybe it's still inside his head as well as he's played the last two seasons. And he has played well.
Very well.
Maybe that's still in. I can't imagine if you're Mike Babcock that you're not thinking about that at least a little bit.
No, and another big loss for Conklin. They were showing, when I saw some of the Frozen Four regionals in Grand Rapids, Michigan, they were showing, I believe it was the 1999 overtime of the NCAA college final. And who was in net but Conklin, and lost it in overtime. I'm not saying that, you know, this is 10 years later, of course, you know, and that was college is a long time ago. But that's still another point where here's Ty Conklin, not quite getting the job done.
What we're saying is the past prologue, really, is what the situation is here. Yeah. And the real question then is Mike, but you got to think that Babcock is going to go with the guy who's won the organization multiple Stanley Cups in the past. He deserves that opportunity. He deserves the opportunity to fail. And the question I think Eric is bringing up is, if Osgood begins to fail, how long will Babcock wait to pull the plug? Will it be after game one, or will it be after game two, or will he even go to game three before he finally goes to Conklin? Will this be the issue? Will the question mark surrounding Conklin's past be the thing that, if Osgood starts to falter, is Babcock going to wait one game too long?
Right. Well, I'm going to put my feelings on display and my homerism on display, and I'm going to predict that the Blue Jackets win it in six. It may not happen, but it's what I want to see happen.
I'm not going that far. But I'm not calling the series either.
Well, let's see. Next on the list, of course, is the St. Louis Blues, one of the best stories, moving up into the sixth slot to take on the Vancouver Canucks.
To get slaughtered by the Vancouver Canucks. Let's put it this way. The way the Canucks are playing right now, I St. Louis is a great story. I'm sorry, James, I didn't mean to cut you off. But,
No.
Now we talk about a team that is, you know, that's I think, ready. And one of the teams that's not backing into the playoffs in any stretch of the imagination, you know, this Vancouver team now looks like one that's ready to, you know, take it as far as they can go. And, you know, Roberto Luongo looks great, and the Sundin has worked out, and Ryan Kessler's pissing off everybody they can get his hands on, and what's not to like?
Yeah, the Sundin bots are scoring. No, it's they're hot, and it's like you said, the Sundin thing finally worked out as it was supposed to. It didn't take that long, really. It seemed like things were still falling apart massively, and we all predicted and looked forward in a way to things going straight to hell in Vancouver, and it really didn't take long for it not to.
Yeah, I tell you, this is the best. Two seasons ago, I have to admit, I said this too, but this is the best team that Roberto Luongo has ever had playing in front of him. Mm-hmm. And credit the folks out in Vancouver for putting together a team that's got some offensive punch and has been getting scoring from guys like Alex Burrows, outside, over and above the Sundin.
Yep.
So, the Canucks have always been a team that I've enjoyed watching because, you know, if you ever got home late at night on a Saturday, you could always flip on Center Ice and watch the Canucks from Vancouver on Rogers Sportsnet. And you get familiar with them. And, you know, heck, I even want to go shopping at Safeway so I can have a chance at winning like a big shopping spree.
Man, Canadian television gives away so much stuff. It just amazes me.
It is. It's really funny. It's hard not to fall in love with the Canucks when, you know, Jim Houston is their play-by-play guy. So even, but this is the best team that that Luongo's had in front of him. He looks ready and tested, and he's the guy this year that had significant time off due to injury. To bring back a theme, so let's not take anything at all away from what St. Louis has accomplished and what Andy Murray and those kids have done. What they've done is nothing short of miraculous. The second half of the season they put together has just been, you know, a thing of beauty. Mm-hmm. And but it's almost like they played themselves into too good a position. I almost would have preferred to see them take on the Red Wings, because I see the Red Wings as more flawed mm-hmm. at this point than the Canucks, because mm-hmm. How can you compare the Red when you start at goaltending? Do you expect Chris Ozga to beat Roberto Luongo?
Yeah.
No. Under no circumstances, and that's the first measure of a playoff team. So,
well, it's funny. There are two ways I look at each team. Would the Vancouver Canucks be where they're at right now if Sundin hadn't worked out? And would the St. Louis Blues be where they are right now if they hadn't sent Manny Legacy down to the minors?
Two very good questions.
Yeah, excellent questions. It's funny. I mean, how about this? Would the St. Louis Blues be where they are now if Eric Johnson hadn't been injured in the preseason?
Mm. Would the St. Louis Blues be where they are now if Paul Kariya were playing right now? Paul Kariya is not the Paul Kariya he used to be, you know?
That's right. And having him on the roster all season long might very well have stunted the development of some other players.
True.
Exactly. What did I see? I saw something on one of the sites, either Yahoo or ESPN last week. Somebody raised a question. So how is that David Backus offer sheet looking now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty darn good. So pretty darn good. So, you know, hats off to John Davidson and the St. Louis Blues, and certainly Andy Murray, whose job was certainly on the line at one point. I mean, imagine what would have happened had Davidson pulled the trigger. And he said, I think at one point that he was like within a day of firing the coach and blowing the entire team up. Hmm. And then they just turned the corner. I read something somewhere, but I cannot remember where it was. I wish I could. But that it was that close back in, I think, December. And then the team put together a couple wins over a weekend, and then it just started winning, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, and yeah.
Speaking of Paul Kariya, by the way, still no word as to whether or not he might actually come back.
Even if he does, I mean, I would seriously be considering where I would stick him in the lineup, considering how hot the Blues have been lately. Paul Kariya, don't get me wrong, I'm sure that people want to see him succeed. I want to see him succeed, but where his slot is in the lineup with a team that's been doing better without him, that's a tough question. Yeah.
I don't know if any coach is going to turn down having a chance to put Paul Kariya in his lineup. I'm sure he could find a place for him somewhere.
I'm sure, and I'm sure also that given the competition for ice time, might actually put a B under his bonnet to play at a level that he hasn't played in a long time.
Yeah.
You know, there's that sense of entitlement for him is gone, because everybody and his brother knows that the St. Louis Blues have been better without him than with him.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and in a way, I mean, he wasn't, it's not 2003 for him anymore. And that's.
No. Yeah. Smaller guys who are in their mid 30s are, you know, generally their production drops off precipitously, you know, beyond the age of 32 or 33. So, you know, and you're looking at that for guys like Drury and Briere and, you know, a variety of others. Martin St. Louis coming up against that age as well, where, you know, time where time just robs the little guys of their ability to robs them of their longevity in this league.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he just, I think, honestly, it's just, that's where we are with Paul Kariya. And, but the question is he going to be willing to move into a different role as he gets older?
Yeah, I think you're right. I like what you said earlier, though, that you know, this is not a team that's going to do that is going to do necessarily well against the Canucks, but they can make noise against somebody else. You know, it's almost unfortunate that they have to face them. But
how strong does that Central Division look next year?
Oh my God! Yeah, well, you and I were talking about this before, that there was a time when all five teams of the Central Division were going to be in the playoffs. It was just phenomenal.
Remember 2 years ago how everybody was complaining about how the Red Wings had such an advantage because the rest of the Central Division was so weak.
Right.
And now, I mean, quite honestly, folks, if that Nashville Predators team finds a way to stay healthy,
they're in the playoffs.
They're in the playoffs, my friends.
Yeah.
And
yep.
And Anaheim is home. So.
No, it's perhaps perhaps it's also the Gary Bettman parody that that we got promised. I mean, that was one a big problem, was that those Central Division teams were handing out 2 points, and it seemed to rotate through three teams, which ones it was going to be this year. And it wasn't that long ago that it was the St. Louis Blues that were so awful and just giving 2 points to everyone. Now they're back. Now they're back in it. And how about the Blue Jackets finally making it for the first time? And that's phenomenal.
Yep. I really would like to be in Columbus for just one playoff game. And that's going to be a very, very loud building, my friend.
Yeah. Yep. Don't go in wearing your Adam Foote jersey.
And we're, I think on that happy note, we're up to our final series, which I think is actually more interesting now than it was a while ago or a couple weeks ago, a couple days ago, when it was looking like it was going to be Vancouver and the Blackhawks. And now it's Calgary, the fading Flames or the failing Flames, against the up and right, the up and coming Hawks.
Well, it's you've
said
it. I don't
know what to say about this.
Well, you've said it before that the Flames won. They won the trade deadline day, and the things that have worked out for them since have worked out amazingly. Jokinen was thought to be pretty much useless. Nobody wanted him. The fans didn't want him. The Coyotes were pretty much over him. And look at what he's done since he's been there. They got the only tradable asset from the Colorado Avalanche in Jordan Leopold, and he's worked out. And I wouldn't count Mika Kiprusoff out of anything at this point.
No, I'm not going to do that. But it seems to me that the real question, maybe the question is it a Pyrrhic victory? Because really, Calgary hasn't played very well in the last couple, last few weeks. They had absolutely no business losing the division to the Canucks. Coming down the stretch, and this is a team that just doesn't seem to be firing on any kind of in any kind of rhythm at this point. And I'm not convinced that Jokinen has really turned out that well. I know he started well when he first got over there, but I haven't seen much since then. Maybe I'm missing something.
Eric, well, this is Mr. Jokinen's first appearance in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we shall learn a lot about him, shall we not?
Yeah.
The big knock on him is that he was this cancer in the locker room, and he wasn't really a leader. I mean, remember when he was traded from Florida to Phoenix at the end of last season? They had that ticket guy in Florida trash him on the way out the door. And, but that's exactly what we've heard. We heard that on his way out of Florida, and then we heard the same thing on his way out of Phoenix when he got traded to Calgary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to hear it twice is, kind of telling. This is his chance. All this time, this guy has been, touted as, on the edge of being, one of the league's elite talents. And, now he's got his opportunity, and he's got the opportunity under the coach that seemed to find a way to light a fire under him back in Florida a couple of years ago.
Mike Keenan.
If anyone's going to get everything they can out of Ole Jokinen, it's Mike Keenan. So, and I've been, quite honestly, even though they didn't hold on, Let's be honest. The Calgary Flames are a pretty good team, and there's still a player there named Jerome Iginla. Take over what's happening on the ice.
Yeah.
So, and he's exactly the kind of man you want out there during the playoffs, who's physically imposing, who's going to terrify his teammates into playing as hard as they can, and is going to terrify the opposition at moments. So, I wouldn't count them out. I think this is going to be a very, very good series.
Oh, I wasn't counting them out. I was just. Earlier, I would have said, if you had asked me this question a month ago, Calgary versus Chicago in the first round, I would have said Calgary in five. Today, I'm not so sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I say Calgary in five simply because I don't think Chicago's got enough experience at this point, except for obviously they've got Hobbyville in net, which is the great equalizer. But to me, it just seems that too many key portions of the Chicago Blackhawks are going to be wild-eyed and starstruck, honestly, with their that's what normally happens. Now, that I would be happy to be surprised by their performance. Don't get me wrong, but you know, the conservative prognosticator in me, and I, as much as I hate to do that, would say most probably they're going to falter, and the more experienced, deeper, meaner Calgary Flames are going to roll over them. Today, I'm not that sure,
right?
Because I don't think that Calgary's locker room is that strong at this point.
Well, I really want to see the Blackhawks succeed here, just to see what they've done under, you know, in this past season, how they've turned that franchise around. I love the matchups. I love seeing Keenan versus Quenneville. It's the battle of the bad mustaches. And also, you know, of course, I don't want, as a Colorado Avalanche fan, I don't want to see Todd Bertuzzi win a Stanley Cup. But those things aside, I really think that Chicago, with their, you know, even though they're young, even though they're, you know, they've got a few presences in the locker room that can help them out through that. And that's kind of been their thing all year. When they seem to falter because of the youth, there's always somebody there to help them pick themselves back up. Anyone?
Sure.
Tell me I'm wrong, somebody, please. did I just blow your mind with the mustache thing? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think we're still having stash issues, especially since we already went over the Anaheim series and didn't talk about how the stash was probably going to fight.
Oh, George Parros, we didn't even mention, but George Parros.
Oh.
The charity mustache that I did not buy.
the best stash plus a playoff beard. Oh. No, sorry.
Joel Quenneville taking over as coach. Of course, you know, I wasn't sure where that was going to wind up with the Blackhawks. It was just so strange when the way he took over. Of course, with Savard fired, what, 6 games into the season? 8 games?
Something like that. 4 or 5, I think.
Yeah. It's good that it's worked out for the team. Has Quenneville won past the first round of the playoffs? I know he won the first round in Colorado last season, but aside from that, I can't remember of him winning, what his playoff record has been like.
I don't think he's made it out. I think he's made it to the conference finals.
Okay, all right, with the Blues.
With the Blues, with Colorado, I think.
No, not with the he made it really conference finals. I don't think so.
Think a conference.
Lost,
I think there was
the second round last year.
Yeah,
he lost in the second round in 06.
They didn't make it the year before.
Final in 2001. Yeah, with St. Louis.
There we go.
Right.
Yep.
There
we go. Yeah. So it's an interesting matchup. I like the I really like the Blackhawks. I want to see them do it, and I want to see them do it quick so that they're healthy against a very, very interesting second round.
Yeah, I hate Calgary, so, you know, go Hawks. I freaking despise Calgary, so, you know, yeah, whatever. I hate Mike Keenan. I hate watching that guy succeed.
Eric, really, I'm very sorry that you have to be around us unprofessionals like this. This is how we roll around here. We wear our fandom on our sleeves sometimes.
Fine.
As you can imagine, you know us.
Puck Calgary. No way. I'm done, man.
You can catch the rest of the conversation, part 2, of course, in episode 29B, dropping in a couple days. You can always find The Rink at www.rinkpodcast.com. You can email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com, or you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. And thanks a lot again for listening to The Rink.